Namaste and in La Ketch, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and this week's guest is Sunitha Sandeep. She is a phenomenal professional. She's currently working for Amazon Web Services as a technical program manager. She was a senior technical program manager for Bloomberg, a senior software development specialist for Yahoo, and she's also graduated from Washington State with a Master of Science in Computer Engineering. Now, here's the flip side of it. She's also a certified inner transformational and integrative wellness coach. She's a certified meditation and mindfulness teacher, as well as a certified positive psychology practitioner. So this is going to be a wonderful conversation and confirmation of this transformational coach in Sunitha. Sunitha, glad to have you here. This is going to be fun. I can tell it already.
So excited to be here. Thank you so much, Zen. I am truly grateful to be here.
You know, you've got some really interesting kind of a dual inner and outer thing going on here that is perfect for the kind of conversations that we have here.
Yeah.
Now, in the beginning of this, you went through the normal corporate realms and conditioning and programming and education and getting ready to, you know, really launch a career. But there was another side of you from this inner perspective that came out later. Where was it when you were younger? How did you first become aware of this inner awareness that you have and how it was connected to everything else? But, and I'm wondering if you could even really talk about it when you were younger too.
Yeah, no, I mean, now that I go back, I can go back and then think about how I was as a kid versus now how I am. I loved finishing up all my work sooner, like my homework, whatever I needed to do. And believe it or not, every day I would spend like 15 minutes lying down on my bed and looking at my ceiling, the fan and the ceiling. That's all. And then
Rene Descartes.
What is it?
Kind of like a Rene Descartes.
It's just looking at the ceiling because it was an act of doing nothing. And I didn't have to do anything, but I could just be and just look at it. And I couldn't explain why I was doing what I was doing. And then even certain times I would just go to the terrace, like in India, like we had a big terrace that I could just sit and watch the sky. I could just lie down on the terrace, on the concrete, and I would just sit and watch the sky. Just look at the sky gazing. And it was not that I could do it for hours, but I would do it for like 15, 20 minutes sometime. And at that time, I didn't know how to put that into words, but I was probably doing because I felt very connected right to myself and connected to everything around me. And this went on for a long time. And I think somewhere I kind of lost in touch with it. As life progresses, you're busy. And because I didn't have an understanding of what was happening when I was doing that, I was like, okay, this is something and I'll do it or not do it. But then later on in my life, I remember, anytime that I would get like a free time, I would just sit and do nothing. And my husband would be like, how can you just sit and do nothing? I'm like, oh, I love doing nothing. And this was before even I got into understanding of what doing nothing was. I would just sit and do
nothing. Right, it's a phenomenal
And I would love right? to do, and I would love for those moments to sit and do nothing. Like, can you believe it? Like something within me was like always wanted to just sit and just be. That's all, with nothing going on in my mind or list of things that I need to go chase after or so. And but of course, the corporate world is on one side.
Later. Now, as a kid, though, you know, this is a really a phenomenal awareness. You know, there's this whole, and in most cultures, most spiritual texts, there's this idea, this notion of being silent,
yeah,
and being quiet within. And that's where, you know, this nothingness is, that from which everything else comes. So to be able to, as a child, have those moments of, and I think that many of us do,
we forget.
And we get caught up in the world and forget being like a child in that respect. We never have to lose that. And the regaining of it is, I think, important for a lot. And hopefully that's happening more often today.
Yes.
Especially with what's been happening the last few years.
I know.
But as a kid, when you were in these places or in this place, what kinds of things would come up for you in this stream of consciousness that you would engage in that nothingness?
Yeah, for me, oh my God, you're asking me a very deep question, which I don't even know how I can answer.
Of course, that's what I do.
What used to come is just a deep trust that everything is okay. A very simple, extraordinarily ordinary. Very ordinary, right? It felt mostly like a connection to just everything around me.
You have a sense of a basking in it?
I couldn't even, I don't know what I would at that moment of time.
Oh, yeah,
but I think
was
as a kid,
as a child, right? You don't
as
have
a child,
like,
I wouldn't have
language.
Any, yeah, the language. But I think the more and more I was trying to go there meant that I think I was getting more energy, more confidence and trust in myself, in a deeper part of myself, not in like, you know, what I do or what I didn't do. And there was always something within me that I could get back to no matter what was happening. And I think that for me was the missing part in all the things that happened over the course of years. And then now I'm again like settling back into that part of myself, which is nothing needs to change. I've done my home, like as a kid, nothing needs to change now. I've done my homework. I don't need to do anything. Nothing's gone my mind. And I can just be here, just look at and just, I think an experience of it, an intimate experience of just watching the sky. That's all I can say then. Like there's nothing more to, like, because if I probably add any other language or words to that, it'll take away from that beautiful intimacy with nothingness.
So perfectly said, the intimacy with nothingness, that's just what a pregnant phrase.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it's true. When we create words, when we draw words out, and we label, we title, we categorize, put it in a box, we miss the essence of what it is in that nondescript inner sense of being with it.
Yeah, so true.
Describing that intimacy with nothingness, right?
Intimacy with nothingness, yeah.
And we don't, do you think that we as humanity kind of don't understand what that really means, or that we haven't really recognized that the reality that we live half inside and half outside?
Yeah. I think everybody would have had this experience, as we just spoke about it. Every person goes through, it's a natural state. It's just a natural state. You can be intimate with anything that you're doing. It doesn't have to be based on an action.
Right.
over the course of years, we have completely forgotten that. And now, because we want to go back, we want to go back to that, our mind tries to put a label to it, right? And then we put a label because some way for the mind to remember, oh, I am here. I'm not exactly in that intimacy currently. And then it just needs a name to put to go to that.
Trigger you. right?
Yeah, to trigger us. And it's helpful too. And it's really helpful because it's some kind of a, like, you know, Ramana Maharshi and all, they just talk about the self-remembrance. All that is needed is self-remembrance. But right. How do you remember what that self is? It has to trigger with something. So the mind looks for something to cling on to mm-hmm. go to that place. But the problem that happens is the mind clings on to the thing that triggers it in a good way, right? Maybe gratitude helps me to get there. So now I'm going to go cling on to the gratitude word. And no matter what's happening, I'll always be grateful. But that's not what's called for.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly not what's called for, right?
Yeah.
And so then we make each of these words as an absolute teaching by itself and cling on to it. And then we miss that intimacy with everything and with starting with probably nothing and then everything.
Mm-hmm. Nothing and there may be, there's another word that just came to mind, emptiness.
Empty and beautiful, yeah, yeah. Right. You know,
there's this purity in emptiness.
Yeah.
Where you're in total faith, trust, love, yeah. However you want to call that. And yeah. Those three kind of encapsulate it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're just totally secure and everything's okay.
Everything's okay, yeah.
Now, in this, do you think that there's maybe a reticence? What I'm thinking and how I'm trying to frame this question yeah. is that when I... At 18, I had a spiritual awakening. I prayed to know what truth was and was willing to die for it, and then had this really bizarre experience of actually being asked if I was willing to die for what I believed in and going through the process of all written documentation that I died. I went into the light and beyond, told what I was here to do, and came back. Now, of course, I told my parents about it, and they immediately had me see a psychiatrist. Fortunately, the psychiatrist had been doing his own work and he understood what I'd gone through and framed it as a spiritual awakening rather than some psychosis, right? Yeah. And so in the process, though, he said, you know, I don't understand why it's happened so young. I was 18.
Wow.
He says, most people don't go through it till their mid-40s, if they ever do. Now, at that time, I didn't really understand what that meant. I just kind of stuck in my mind and then realized in my mid-40s, career change, empty nesting, there's all kinds of 40-something events, right, in your maturation process that you go through that then, like you're saying, it kind of gets you to want to go back to that intimacy with
that intimacy with nothingness. So beautiful. Yeah.
Now, is that what you've experienced and kind of, because you really, how does it feel to be an overachiever?
There's always a dark side to it. There's always a dark side, right? So, and I think it's got to do a lot of archetypal patterns. That's what I call more from a psychology, more from, and now we are shifting our talk to more on the human side of it,
sure.
Which is a lot on the being perfectionist, being a people pleaser, either setting too tight boundaries or not setting boundaries, trying to have everything under control. Like, you know, I want it this way and trying to own everything, try to take responsibility for everything. And for me, all of those archetypal personality patterns really helped me to take me from a place where I was to take me to a place where I thought I needed to achieve certain things. It really helped me.
Mm-hmm. And then was it the curiosity of how those reflected aspects of yourself that you could see immediately, maybe not some that, you know, the invisible, because we always have those things we're not aware of yet.
Yeah.
Did that give you the opportunity to kind of take a multi-perspective view of self?
Nothing. So I was completely cut off from all of those, like I was experiencing as a small kid, like, you know, mm-hmm. just sitting and just being with myself. I was completely cut off, and it was the next part of my journey was all about chasing success. I needed this. I needed to get this. This is what life was for me.
And you had quite a journey with that.
And I had quite a journey with that. Perfectionist, even at my workplace, I was doing pretty well. A lot of awards, a state rank in India. Pretty good. I was doing pretty good on that. But then All of these came at a cost because I was also developing these things of anxiety, like a stress. I didn't know how to handle things. I always had to like get certain things, and I would do anything. Like I would go to any extent of working really hard. I became a workaholic. I would do anything to get what I wanted because that's how I was kind of trained or I was conditioned, right?
Yeah, that was with moral and ethical considerations, right? Not just anything. Right?
Yeah, that's just how we all are. In fact, probably 90% of the human population, that's how we are conditioned. Like do, like one list after the other, one thing after the other.
Yeah, we forget.
And for me, the shift. Yeah, and then for me, the shift happened when I talk about this in my TEDx talk. Shift happened when I go into a medical surgery, and after I get up, like I realized there was a nerve damage, and my left arm from my elbow to my fingers, I couldn't feel it, I couldn't move it, and that was the first time I felt that I was out of control. Like no matter what I could do, no matter how much I could be empowered in life, no matter how much I can struggle and do and succeed and do anything, there was something else that will just happen in life. Ups and downs will happen in life. But was I prepared to face that situation? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I was not prepared. I did not know. I did not know how to gracefully fail, whether in my professional life or in my personal life or in my inner life. I did not know how to fail. I did not know how to accept life the way it was. I did not know how to embrace the life that is given to me. I did not know how to take the reality.
You have an interesting phrase, the grace of failure. Yeah. Right? And that's true. We often, and there's quite a bit of evidence that most of us tend to be more self-deprecating in our quiet moments than anything else.
Yeah.
And there's this constant battle inside of our heads, or this self-deprecating, you know, beating yourself up because you're not this, you're not that, you're not enough, you're, you know, you've risen to the imposter syndrome now, and you don't want to be discovered, because if they did, then they would like you, right? Well, that's all a facade that we put up based on what the outer teachings.
Yeah.
Right? How did you discover this disparity and begin to kind of ease your way back into that experience of nothingness? Because it's obvious that you had, and you know, with your TED Talk and the development that you've done and switching, or including now, not necessarily switching, but being inclusive of the transformational aspects of.
Yeah. So I did go through a lot of healing. A traumatic healing, more on the somatic level. And I think this is where I want to go next for people, because even with an awakening experience, it's just an experience. This is how I put it. Mm-hmm. Even the experience of nothingness, even the experience of hitting that emptiness and feeling that, like feeling like death, mm-hmm. right? Wherein completely
belief. Here's the distinction I'd like to make, because a lot of us have these belief systems, BS, right, that get in the way of the experience. And I would think that we often would need an experience system to base our lives on. And it, to me, it seems like we can't think our way through a system built on vibrations.
Yeah.
We need to sense our way through it. And that's an experience.
It's an experience. Yeah. It's totally. I totally agree with what you're saying. It's at the end of the day, it's just an experience. And right. So for me, whether I would be, if we would take this as a spectrum, whether I would be on the complete identified with like a negative thought or something like an actual form, Or I could go on the other side of the spectrum and then be identified as a formlessness. At the end of the day, both are an experience for me. And I think this is what my journey has been, is not to get identified in the form or in the formlessness. Because a lot of times what I have seen in the spiritual community Zen is we go all the way from here. I'm not the mind, I'm not the body, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not that. Right? Everything is an illusion on one side. And then we go into the formlessness. But then they get stuck in the formlessness because the embodiment is a very difficult concept, or not even a concept, it's a process. Very difficult process. The healing, getting whatever we have learned about ourselves, the insights that we have had, the aha realizations, the aha moments that we have had, taking that and putting that in your relationships, in how you behave with your spouse, in how you act with your kids, in how you work in your workplace, in how I teach my or I coach my people. It's a whole new thing. The businesses, success and failures of businesses, right? It's a whole new embodiment, right?
Right. And it is an embodiment. That this is a distinction that we, you know, most of us, it appears, we live from the shoulders up.
Yeah. Right?
We're thinking, we're doing, we're not necessarily being. Being includes the entire body, which is connected to everything. And there's, you know, quantum physics is now, you know, showing we're all like, everybody's going, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense, right? Yeah. Even though here we are in these physical forms that don't seem like they're empty space or both, right?
Yet
we're able to configure consciously this capacity to engage life and be in both those places, the nothingness and the form, right?
Together at the same time.
Exactly.
Simultaneously.
Where I was leading with that was the question, do you feel that this is the embodiment of a, let's say, cosmic consciousness or infinite intelligence condensed into a form with a specific vibration or frequency that then fits into something greater perfectly? We're just in the process of discovering that, right? Yeah, all this multidimensional consciousness concepts, and like you were talking about the spiritual community, right? They get lost in all of this stuff. Well, how do you embody this? How do you bring the being into this reality in a more full sense?
Of
what is available and how we can allow this, as you alluded to earlier, natural order within us to permeate our lives. How do you, from what you're saying so far, it appears that you're of that same ilk mind flow, for lack of a better perception, right?
Yeah.
How do you incorporate that? What are the kinds of ways that are articulatable that are maybe simple enough to understand? Because I know I can get really, I have a huge vocabulary and I, you know, it's hard to bring that down sometimes. However, we all experience this very simply. We just have all this complexity wrapped around it.
Yeah.
How do you get through that and share that from where you're at?
Yeah. So multiple levels, multiple layers, right? So it's just like, something is hidden with multiple layers over it. And I think to clear things at every layer, different techniques are used. And you want to probably use the right techniques at the right time. We don't want to take like a hammer versus like, you know, a small pin to do some like a work, right? So both tools are needed.
We don't want a sledgehammer when stippling is necessary.
Exactly. So we need to be able to identify what tool to use when. Right. And some of us have like, you know, maybe like few steps ahead of somebody else. And we can just say, huh, that's probably not the tool that you want to use. And tools do have their own use. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's dealing a lot with the personality aspect, I usually start with more a mental based aspects. This perspective, that perspective, mindset. This is a very common thing that we start with.
Right. That's how we think. That's how we think. Aware of how we think and then the thoughts that we think. This is a real difficult challenge for, you know, to begin to manage those 70,000 thoughts a day that we have.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How do we see, how do we observe those first of all and not feel like, oh, I've got to go into meditation in order to do that.
Yeah.
That to me just doesn't, you can self-monitor. Right.
You can self-monitor just by the awareness of your mental thoughts and so on. So you can develop different perspectives. So for me, the whole journey to take them on is again on a spectrum. Let them get used to the different perspectives, mm-hmm. just at the mental level. Then what happens with this is now the mind is open, because at the end of the day, this whole journey is about being open, being willing, being more tender and being more vulnerable. What can we do?
That last word specifically is the key to the rest of it, vulnerability. Right?
That's all, right? So at each level, as how we humans are, because we start from the surface level and then go into the internal core level. So at the surface level, which we can start from the mind, which is a way easy to connect to literally everybody, mindset, the 101 of your transformational journey. So take them through a spectrum of, oh, I thought this, but there is this also possible. So you take them to experience different thoughts at the surface level of mental thoughts. Mm-hmm. Then once they feel they're more saturated at that level, take them a little bit lower below their shoulders, get them into more on the emotional intelligence that I'm feeling angry and it's okay. I can also feel love and that's okay. So again, saying that it doesn't have to be always feeling good and feeling happy and feeling joyful.
Or feeling self-deprecating or thinking self-deprecating thoughts because you're feeling a certain way. Oh, yeah. I shouldn't be feeling that way. You know, this
exactly.
is, again, more of that misjudgment. You know, we just, it's that self-criticism that keeps us from just being okay.
Yeah, that's the big shift, because all we do is we want to avoid certain feelings, certain emotions. So now the second layer is to take them through a spectrum of all emotions, of the human emotions, and then say it's okay, right? And I think in the process, what happens is that our nervous system and our body starts getting used to being angry. We don't have to express, but we can feel angry. We don't have to express our negative thoughts, but it's okay to have negative thoughts. They all are happening on a spectrum, right? So now,
and the difference being that it's okay to have them, just don't embody them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's that one, you can sense it. That doesn't mean you have to be it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, right? Yeah. But then I think it's more so for the body to be okay to feel all of these. That's where the somatic level comes in. Now the next level is more at the gut level, which is more on what sensations, because usually when I work with women and even with myself, all boils down to the fears at the base chakras, the root, just about the root chakra and so on and so on.
Solar, sacral and root.
Root. Right. Yeah. The lower part of the chakras, which is all about feeling of worthlessness, feeling of loneliness, feeling of not being seen enough, or feeling of that something is going to happen, I'm going to die. Right.
And then the other side of that, It's total freedom.
So
this makes sense. You know, there's an indigenous philosophy that I heard some years ago, and I bring this up on occasion, in the three brains, right? The gut, the heart, and the head. So this is kind of, And maybe that has to do with groupings of chakras as well.
Yeah, I think so too. Possible. I think so. Yeah, because the same situation can be experienced one way in the head, can be a different perspective through our emotional body, and completely differently through our gut. And even within the gut, like, you know, a little bit upper stomach can feel a certain way, that the lower stomach can feel it certain way. Right. So again,
we interpret the same sensation, right? Anxiety on one end.
Yeah.
And anticipation.
On the other end. Exactly. It's the same. There's a thin line there. That's all it is. That's all it is. So again, taking them to these layers and clearing them as much as possible, then slowly I think the mind and the body kind of gets used to this. It's like, this was not something that I did not know before. I was always this. This feels so natural. I didn't have to, like, because any amount of work that you do, anything that you do, will take you away from that truth of yours. Anything that you do, even like, oh, I need to be doing my practices so that I can get there or that feel there, is going to be counterintuitive. Because I think at that stage when we come, the only thing that we have to realize is, I don't think I can do anything. And where is the complete loss of personal will? I think that the whole journey is a loss of personal will, the willpower and the personal will.
And yet when, for me anyway, I'll just speak from my own experience, when that perception, that understanding of letting go, the personal will, right? There's another will that becomes present that seems like we were talking earlier about the perfected form, fit, and function in the world, right? That's another will that seems to be at that base level, natural state of the frequency that we carry, that has all that data that we haven't been able to unpack because we haven't been quiet enough.
Yeah, so. That's all it is. That's all. It's that simple, but it's not easy. It's very simple. That's all it is. Right. And then I think we can give a lot of words and meanings to the whole journey, right? Because in this journey, to let go of something that is here, we take a perspective of here, the kind of opposite perspective, right? And then we think, oh, this is the perspective now. But then it's neither of those perspective or both of those perspective in the moment. I can be angry or I can be very loving. But what operates in the moment needs to be aligned with what I want to do. Anger as an emotion has its own intelligence. Mm-hmm. Love as an emotion has its own intelligence. Presence has its own intelligence. Complete let go has its own intelligence. But then we try to hold on to either of these all the time and then say, that's the way to be. No, the way to be is actually undefined. The way to be defines itself in the moment by moment by moment experience. It's like a fluidity of our consciousness, wherever it wants to go, whenever it wants, in the moment, because I don't know what's going to happen. None of us probably know what's going to happen in the next moment.
We have perception of what might happen. Although there's all these different probabilities, and until we show up and engage, we're not going to know. There's, again, that feeling, that sensation that begins with the gut, right? Where, what needs to be, the kind of questions that we ask.
Yeah.
For instance, how may I be of best service?
Yeah.
Right? Not just, and this is encompassing both service to self and service to others, because the ultimate service to self is service to others. That's community.
Yeah.
The cohesion of the energy that takes form in a more perfected, or let's say a better order that supports all rather than singles or a few. And so there's this, do you see this happening on a massive scale, where this understanding is becoming more present? And if so, How do you see that playing out? Is there this interplanetary civilization that is emerging through those who are open and aware now that is helping to shift this consciousness, this overall consciousness into a new age?
I definitely think so. I see that happening with many women that I'm working with. I see that happen with so many people. There is a level of openness that is happening. But I think here is where I differ with respect to service, because somehow the word service has been romanticized a lot.
True.
It's like if somebody comes for the first session of my coaching, it's more like a pageant answer for me. Like, you know, what is it that you want to do? I want to serve others. I want to serve, right? It's just been romanticized a little bit because we just feel we need to be doing. We need to be doing. However, that's where I want to go.
Sure.
There's a deeper part within us that wants to do that no matter what, because that is who we are at the deeper level. But then the service is not the way our mind has projected what service is. That's all. That's all is the difference. So it's
a prescriptive path.
Exactly, right? And I think that's the big difference. Is the word service coming as a concept or a mental thinking or a belief structure that's coming from your self, the small self, or is the service naturally playing in your life on a day-to-day basis, coming from a very deeper big self?
It's kind of like
that's
a submission
all is the difference.
To your greater self, right?
That's all is the difference, because now it could be service today. It can be some other word that we can replace service with.
Mm-hmm.
It can be love. It can be compassion. Compassion, when it comes from our mind and our heart as a human, is completely different from compassion that flows from a deeper level. Because the compassion that flows from a deeper level can be a very fierce grace, can be very fierce. It doesn't feel like it's a very sweet, kind, tender kind of compassion. It can feel extremely fierce too. Yes. And that's where the disconnect is. If we have mental concepts of what compassion needs to be, the true compassion can never open up.
True compassion is raw.
Raw.
Right?
Raw.
And we see it as that. It's just raw. And because it is so raw, I think we're scared of it.
Yeah, exactly. We're scared of it. Yes. Yes.
How do you recommend the overcoming of that fear of vulnerability and being raw and real? Because we're taught, especially in America, right? You know, you've got to be politically correct. You can't do this or that or say this or that. That's just, well, come on. How if we're constrained by all of that, how could we possibly be authentic?
Yeah. And I think for me personally, once I let go of all of the belief structures, whether I needed to be this way versus that way, whether I need to express myself authentically or not even express myself authentically, it's very difficult to do this. But any kind of a concepts to do this way or this way stands in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Any, even the most good concept, right? When we don't have any concepts there, that's when something operates. And when that operates, there's literally no question whether it's doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And it just feels like it is in alignment. Some people will like it, some people won't like it. I may not like it myself because my conditioning will say, no, that's not the way I need to be doing. But then there's a deeper intelligence. And when we become start becoming instruments, it's a different life. It's not a life that I wanted to.
You got to figure out how to tune our instrument first.
Yeah, you just have to tune.
We don't know how to play in concert if we're out of tune.
Yeah, You just have to tune your instruments. And it's, and what I have been observing, Zen, is not what I want to do is what is happening. It's where something is doing, and I remove my hands out of the steering wheel, but I'm very curious to know what's happening. And I feel like I'm aligned with it and it's enjoying, but at the same time, it's got nothing to do with what I want to do as a personal will. It's something else. And the rest of my life.
And yet so true.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole journey is to integrate the personal will into that will. And there's a lot of resistance there. I want it this way versus something, but something intuitively, you know, where it's going. Intuitively, I think we all have that feeling that it's going where it's going. And the more I try to resist, the more suffering it is, because after a certain stage, you realize you just have to stop resisting. And let it.
Now, in your positions, this especially in the corporate world, right? That has the flavor of what's called leading from behind.
Yeah.
Right, where you're just kind of looking at what's taking place in front of you without attachment.
Yeah.
And you have a sense of where it's going, and so then from that inner perspective of the knowing of where it needs to go without attachment, then gives you the capacity to kind of nudge it, because you've opened yourself up to be able to be authentic and real and in the moment and expressive of that. Now, this almost seems to be a greater cohesion of energies, many energies that we're engaged with that we may not be aware of yet we can sense and feel them.
That
also be a sense of being in harmony, because harmony, you know, when we hear harmony, we think of bliss, right? Well, that's not really what it means. Harmony means that you manage chaos well.
That's all. That's all it is. So beautifully put.
So does this, In this chaotic period, because you're bridging inner and outer, you're working in corporate environments that are leading edge in the world, especially with Amazon Web Services, right? These are areas of where many worlds are merging, and some of them we aren't even aware yet, but magic is happening. How do you see this happening? How can it be better facilitated? And what can we do as individuals to help that flow in our own lives to become present?
Yeah. I mean, for me, no matter what corporation or so, at the end of the day, we are dealing with people. People. Whether people at work, whether people in my family, whether people in my community, whether people or me itself is who's another human, another person, right? And we all have that inner groundedness, inner connection. And when we start as leaders or as parents or as partners or as community leaders, maybe, or as like coaches, the most simplest way is just to listen. A deep listening, not in a way to, I'm waiting for my turn to talk, versus just a deep listening.
And the third insight that Redfield shares in Celestine Prophecy, it's just be quiet until you feel that inner prompting to speak.
And I think the listening is too underrated, right? But I think everything happens through that, because now
what are we listening to? Do we have a question, or what are we curious about that we're listening to?
That's all. Just whatever you're talking, like whatever the other person is talking, no matter what they're saying, because people sometimes talk through their conditioning. Sometimes people are free enough. People are authentic. And sometimes people aren't, for whatever reason they are there. Just listening. And what happens, there's a magic in listening, is the other person opens up. Now they feel it is safe. there's so much power in that, because through listening flows our consciousness, flows our awareness, flows our attention, our presence and love. And for the other person, for them, for a second, they don't have to prove to get our attention. They don't have to do anything to get our attention. All they have to do is just feel safe. The minute they are safe, something within them starts flowing. And now there's a beautiful inner connection that happens. Ideas get formed. Businesses start opening. Creativity just naturally flows. There's a big energy that is there. A creative potential starts flowing in. And I think as leaders, probably this is what is needed. Like, I think right now, if you see all the conscious leadership, leading with empathy, is all about
emotional intelligence.
Just listen, because most of the times we ourselves are not in a state to listen. We are in a state like, okay, how can I talk next? Okay, how can I make my point?
Well, yeah, we're in the process. We're pushing and pulling energy to get where we want. Instead of just being okay with what is and allowing what it needs to be. You know, it's like years ago, I was told that everything would be there at its appointed time.
Yeah.
So that has nothing to do with me, right? And nor does any of our other events have anything to do with us specifically. However, it's the act of showing up, of being available, of, you know, and, you know, for me, it's like stepping into the executive director role for the global peace movement that I'm helping to facilitate now, live and let live. It sounds so simple. And so, you know, the phrase is just so catchy. And with two items of it, covering moral and legal aspects. This is where, you know, most peace movements seem to just want to have this, I don't want to say, you know, the kumbaya attitude, right? Can't we all just get along? Well, that's great. However, in order to do that, we've got to calibrate the laws that remove all the aggression that keeps us from that.
From that, exactly.
Now, that's a long-term process. It involves politics, legislation. Right now, politics is just, it's a kiss of death when you talk to people about being involved in it, right? Yeah. Because we don't trust it. We don't trust the process that you mentioned earlier, right? So then the moral side, that's the let live side, you know, don't be an aggressor. And the live side then is be a good human. So this gives us the opportunity to help, to nurture, to grow, to become this vibrant collective that then can facilitate change, because those, the, you know, like anything, the statistics play out, right? You've got those, fourth and fifth standard deviation people that are on the fringes waiting to step in and play their roles.
Yeah.
Age hasn't been set yet for them to come in and be moved into those places that are prepared for them.
Yes.
At least this is kind of, you know, if you're looking at the big picture and
big picture, role,
what might we see? How might it roll out? And how might we be able to participate more fully in it? Without fear.
First, remove our own fears. That's all it is, right?
Right.
For me, everything is based on an inside-out transformation. What the world is going to be a few years from now, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know if I can comprehend.
Well, nobody anticipated, expected this, you know, massive sequestration that just took place.
I know, right now. Yeah.
Well, maybe.
But I think the only thing that we can do, each individual can do, is remove our own fears. And that itself is a huge service by default, a service that happens naturally.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. We talked about removing them. That's all great.
Yeah.
How do we do this? What's the process that you found that works for you and others that you train in that way too, so that we can free ourselves more easily? Because there are, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, I got to let go of my fear. Well,
No, again, as I mentioned, mental level, emotional level, and the somatic level, all three would have to be done. And of course, there are practices, there are inquiry-based practices. There are sometimes meditation practices will help, sometimes just to calm the nervous system first. And then a lot of inquiry, then a lot of transmutation process, wherein the energy that's converted and stuck and contracted in one way needs to kind of transmute into presence. So
now, you and I understand that language very well.
Yeah.
But how do we break it down to a very simple, like when you have this, when you have a sense of fear, what do you do? Do you ask the questions yourself? Why am I feeling this? What's going on around me? Am I?
Simple question. For me, what I teach with my women are, what am I afraid to feel? What do I fear the most? And sit with those, and you will go through more fear. Sit with those.
Right.
Spend at least like half an hour just by yourself. This is a beautiful self-care. That's all we need to do. Just half an hour every day. What do I fear the most? And of course, sometimes initially it's difficult to do this alone.
It's not easy.
So it's always helpful to work with somebody. Somebody who can give you that space. I help a lot of PTSD people too. And then it's very difficult for them to feel safe, first of all, right? So with somebody who has gone through similar journeys, similar experiences, the minute we give them a safe space by listening and being there and being present and saying that it's okay, you can open up, giving them the acceptance, giving them that embracing, giving them that compassion, giving them just by being, that's all. We don't have to force it, fake it or anything. Just by listening, something within you starts operating, and then they connect to that, and then they start opening up. And then once the opening begins, they feel safe that it's okay to be vulnerable. That's the key. It's okay to be vulnerable. Then naturally the part of surrendering happens more and more and more and more. And then the different parts, the fragments of us, that we as humans are fragmented, the integration of that happens, slowly happens. Mm-hmm. So you need some kind of a grounding initially so that all of those parts start integrating the fragments. And that grounding is healing, is meditation, is a safe place. Once they are a little bit more grounded in that space, I think the rest of the integration, life will take it. If you are present today in the life, the way it is, the triggers that are there happening every second for us, that itself is a beautiful opportunity for us to awaken more and more into our depth. What is not available in today's world? for us to trigger, like, you know, there's always a button that can get pushed, and that's all it is, that journey. And the more and more,
go ahead. How did this fear of even starting the process, that seems to be one of the most intimidating factors, right? Because we don't know what it's going to be like. We know that we need it. We're so comfortable with who and how we are currently, that this change, what's it going to be like? How's life going to change? Am I still going to have friends? Is my relationship going to be all right? You know, am I still going to have a job? Right? Yeah. These kinds of things. Or am I going to turn into this superhuman being that can do and be anything that they want, or be and do anything that they want?
People who have those questions come from a very spiritual background, because somehow spirituality has made us believe that the more and more you go into these levels of consciousness, you're kind of cut off, or there is just this concept. And maybe those concepts really helped the spiritual folks to, because you do go through certain levels of consciousness. We do experience that, right? But then there is always getting back to normalcy, getting back to your natural state. Mm-hmm. A natural state is something that we all have experienced. And that's what this whole journey, no matter how spiritual you are. Adya Shanti, I don't know if you've heard about him, a Zen teacher, Adya Shanti. He says there's a time that comes where then you have to just let go of your spirituality too. And letting go of the spiritual identity is a very difficult part for a lot of people who are on the spiritual journey for a long time, right? And that's where all of these questions come, like, you know, will I become the superhuman? Will there be like universal consciousness always happening? It's your natural state. We all have experienced this. It's our true nature.
And we're set up to do it.
Yeah, and it's so simple. Right? So when they come to me with those questions, like, you know, this is changing for me, like, will I still be like one of the women that I worked with, I know I am transforming so much. Life is okay now, but what if this happens and that happens? And what if I'm not able to provide to my kids? And the first question that I asked her, why would life not want a mother to provide to her kids? Like, the more and more this work, the transformative work, is getting us to our natural state. Right. And what comes out of a motherly identity is always nurturing her kids. What comes out of an identity of a wife is always nurturing and supporting her husband. That's a natural state. You will get into that natural state, and everything that you're going to lose is your, I need to be this way, this way, this way, this way. Those
and
are
if I'm not, I'll be rejected, right?
Yeah, that's all. But then what happens then is the more and more they get present with their kids, their relationship with their kids begin to transform. They'll be like, one of my clients said, oh, my kids are listening to me more because I am listening to them more. Right? This is funny how that reciprocal activity takes place, isn't it? Yeah, this is such a beautiful transformation. So what I tell them is, look at the transformation that you have got. Your kids weren't listening, and that was triggering her. That was more frustration. It was very difficult, overwhelming to be with the kids. And all you had to do is not train them, just listen to them, mm-hmm. and they are listening more. This is a transformation. Do you want this transformation to continue? Oh yeah. Yeah, this is what the real transformation is. It's not that you will become completely some new identity. Yes, you can if you hold on to it, but that's not where this is going. You can't hold on to anything. And it's natural. It's natural for you, natural for me. And what is the fear there, right? And I think it's I went through my own set of fears. Now I can talk this way, but every stage to let go of an identity was almost like a death.
Like
a psychological death, right?
I can totally relate. You know, the first year I had my experience and I had the psychiatrist that recognized it, he also told me to keep my mouth shut because others wouldn't understand me. Well, I don't do that well. And the following year I shared the same, I got beat up at a frat house in college and I ended up in the hospital and my parents decided to commit me because the message wasn't getting through. I was trying to explain things, the articulation that I was having, the silly stuff that I was doing in the outer world certainly didn't help either.
Yeah.
But I wasn't being self-destructive to that end. However, with the same information that I shared with the psychiatrist in the hospital, total flip in the perception.
Yeah.
He then labeled me a manic depressive paranoid schizophrenic and put me on 2,000 milligrams of Thorazine a day.
Wow.
Now, here's this completely, you know, 1 year to the next.
Yeah.
Total flip of experience with the same thing, the same truth, the same understanding, the same yearning to be heard.
Yeah.
And one listened, the other didn't, or only listened from his frame of
their framework, yeah.
Right, and this is the thing that I think you kind of encapsulated, didn't really come out say it, but when we look at things, we only see them from the views that we're capable of seeing them from.
Yeah.
Especially if we've been trained as a clinician, we're only going to see things through the DSM-4 or 5 or whatever that is now.
Yeah.
And we're not looking at, okay, what else is available that we're not aware yeah. of, the possibilities to explore. Obviously, there is an intelligence that's operational here, that there's some things happening that we may not understand, and from a science or medical standpoint. Mm. However, from an experiential standpoint,
you know,
these things are happening.
Yeah.
So what more is possible if we just ask better questions and shut up?
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Yeah. Beautiful.
Now, I know I'm not the only one that's had those kinds of experiences. And that's part of one of the reasons why I'm doing the show, because folks like us and you, right, probably went through all of that fear and had some challenges in your, let's say, nuclear environment, yeah. whether it was family or coworkers or what have you. There's this challenge to sanity, right? Yeah. Or how we appear to others in that process that haven't had that capacity to, now, we all have the capacity, they haven't made the choice to explore or had the trauma events in their lives that precipitated that exploration.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned specifically that this kind of the somatic trauma that you work with, right? That this body, the cellular memory that we have that keeps us in that constrictive state,
yes.
because we do have that fear. We want to protect ourselves. Well,
yeah.
the ultimate protection is none.
See, that's the biggest realization. And when you have that realization, that's all done.
Right.
There's no protection. Yet, we still care. We still try to protect ourselves. And that's the paradox. That's the paradox.
Mm-hmm. Now, how, recognizing that paradox, and I have a couple of purple ones, by the way. There are some things that we need to understand in order to get through this at very simple levels. What could you share that would help others on an individual, daily, moment-to-moment basis, that simple things that they could do, or here we go into the doing again, right? Yeah.
Which is fine too, until certain point. Like, you know, they say you have to go to a place to knock on the door.
Mm.
That is what we do. And when the door opens is when we just fall into that being. But till we go there, we probably have to do certain things that will at least take us in the direction of being, not away from the direction of being. So doing is good. We can meditate until we realize that we don't have to meditate. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's okay to do till right. we realize.
So what I hear you saying is we need to get out of this idea that everything is prescriptive.
Yeah.
And that there are some ways to just follow that natural flow of energy in the ways that it shows up in our lives. Because you find that in that place when you're asking the question of, okay, what's next? That it's actually right in front of you?
Right in front of you. That's the most simplest answer. Yet, do I plan what I want to do? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I just live in the flow? Yes. How do I decide whether I plan or live in the flow? That decision maker needs to get out of the way.
Strategy.
So that decision maker, when that's the personal will, when that gets out of the way, the natural instinct will plan when it needs to plan, will go with the flow when it needs to go with the flow. That's the paradox. You don't know which one needs to happen at what time. Mm-hmm. But if you let your personal will get out of the way, something else starts operating. And that's beautiful.
Now we're talking about this, and this sounds all well and good, warm, fuzzy, right? Inclusive, embracing, expansive, and all of that. But when we're dealing, when you're dealing with Amazon Web Services and the team of people that you work with, or for instance, with me, with, you know, some of the partnering workshops I've done with building road and bridge construction projects, we're dealing with multi-million-dollar environments.
Yeah. I would not talk a little bit about my workplace in these. We don't have to talk much about those. We'll keep this separate.
It just happens, right? Yeah. Because you're there in that place. So there's So what I now hear you saying is that there are others who have gone through their own awareness gathering, right? And come to that place with an understanding that doesn't have to be spoken or articulated. It's demonstrated by the activity, the being.
That's all it is. That's all it is. We don't have to speak. We don't have to say. And again, it's just humans. It's a human to human connection, no matter where we are dealing with, whoever we are dealing. It's a human to beautiful human to human connections, whether it's your peers, whether it's your leadership team, or whether it's somebody who reports to you, whether it's your children or your spouse or your community. And I think we, as long as that connection is there, you feel effortless, you feel good. And the minute you feel good and things are just happening naturally, the next step of actions just come in there. And I think the whole awakening journey removes that identity that is trying to figure it out, you see? Right?
Well,
that's all it is, because now all of these questions are like, how do I behave versus here in my job or my life as an entrepreneur? I help as a coach. That fear, that identity itself, when it's not there, what does it fear? Right. So
it's like, from what I'm hearing you saying, and I use the terms attention, intention, and interaction. Where you focus on, you can allow yourself to just be in that place, and you come in, you've got the skill set, you've got the understanding, you've got all the details that are necessary to perform well, if not at peak and beyond, which ultimately brings a sense of joy.
And even peak too. Why not peak? Like when we are operating in ultimate presence, the peak potential naturally flows. And all our work is just to ground ourselves in that layer when the peak, because that's where the shift is from masculine to feminine energy is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, peak potential for me is creative ideas just flowing in, no matter what you do, where you are, like you're going on, I'm speaking on a stage, and it's like, sometimes I prepare, sometimes I just let go and then see what shows up. Right. And I'm surprised by what comes out. I don't know. So I think it's just presence. And for me, the most important question that I usually tell people is, ask a question. Am I avoiding this presence? Am I doing something to avoid? What am I avoiding? Am I avoiding this moment? Because all the time we do things to avoid this present moment. And the more and more we feel that, I need to do this. I need to do this. Am I avoiding this present moment? I think our mind, body, heart, everything comes aligned at that.
Would a better question maybe be, how can I more enjoy this moment rather than how am I avoiding it?
Because that could be too.
And yeah, there's a fine line there, but you're thinking that, where's your attention, right? Your attention is on what you're doing to avoid it, instead of you're putting your attention on what could be more explorative.
For me, that question feels a little bit, again, doing, like putting the attention is again a doing for me. For me, the where I see and where I, my perspective is, where do I stop the doing? So everything that I was doing was a resistance to this present moment. That's all it is. And the question, what am I avoiding, means, I'm doing something to avoid. Because when there is no avoidance, when there is no resistance, you're naturally attentive. Naturally,
you're not caught up in the past or the future, thinking about what has been, what might show up here, or how that might affect the future. You're actually able
Because then attention, intention, interaction, all of it naturally happens.
Yep, absolutely.
Beautiful.
Sunitha, this has just been a phenomenal conversation. I totally appreciate who you are, how you express, the ability that you have to help transform lives, and the evidence of it in your own. It's a real honor to have the pleasure.
It's a real honor to talk to you, hear to you, hear your perspective. I love the humor that you have, even in a journey on a journey like this. Loved, enjoyed our deep conversations.
You gotta have fun. You're doing something wrong.
I know. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Thank you so much, Zen. I truly, truly appreciate being here. Very grateful to you.
Awesome, Sunitha. And I'll have your TED Talk and things listed below the description. Thank you again.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you.
And namaste.
Namaste.
And la ketch a la kin, which is the full statement. Thanks for sticking with us for this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and I'll see you next time.